We now discuss monochronic and polychronic time systems. These are two systems commonly used to refer time and its influence on society. A monochronic time system means that things are done one at a time and time is segmented into precise small units. Under the system, time is scheduled, arranged, and managed. When we talk of monochronic time, it means that the focus is based only on one aspect, which is, say, ideally work. When we talk of monochronic, it means that we do not mix our professional as well as our personal life. We segregate the two. When we talk of monochronic, it also means that somewhere we are planning an activity and we are going in the direction to achieve the goals. Thus, when we talk of monochronic time system, what is one of the most important aspects? That we are focusing only on that particular activity within the time frame. The United States, like other Western countries, is considered monochronic society. This perception of time is learned and rooted in the Industrial Revolution, where factory life required the labor force to be on hand and in place at an appointed hour. That means if the labor force was expected to be there at 9, at that location, it was understood they will do so. There can be no changes in timings. There can be no shift. That means neither a delay nor probably a shift. For Westerners, time is a precious resource not to be wasted or taken lightly. They claim that we buy time, save time, spend time, and make time. When we say make time, that means they're able to fit into their hectic schedule whatever is required. Ideally, time management is considered to be mind management. If we manage our mind well, being focused, such as the monochromic society, then we realize that all our goals can be achieved. We ideally are too meticulous in terms of planning the activity within the time frame, and thus it comes up to a monochronic society. Our time can be broken down into years, months, days, hours, minutes, seconds, and even milliseconds. We use time to structure both our daily lives and events that we are planning for the future. We have schedules that we must follow, appointments that we must go to at a certain time, classes that start and end at certain times, work schedules that start and end at certain times, our favorite TV shows, the start and end of us at a certain time. Our favorite TV shows, they start and end at a certain time. Now, what is the concept out here? That all our lives, time is crucial. Whether it's your personal or professional life, we need to ideally compartmentalize the two. We need to prioritize. We need to figure out that what can be done in or within this limited time, in or within the day. If we ideally go in a systematic manner or in an orderly manner, then it gets easier for our goals to be achieved. In the monochronic business world, the schedule is sacred. Time is tangible and viewed as a commodity where time is money or time is wasted. When we say time is tangible, it is actual. It is real. It is not imaginary. And that is why they say time which is gone is lost. So we need to be highly focused to ideally live up to deadlines. The result of this perspective is that Americans and other monochronic cultures, such as the German and Swiss, they place a paramount value on schedules, tasks, and getting the job done. That means they could actually be pressurizing in terms of the task to be completed. But that kind of pressure is required, since time which is gone does not come back. It also means they are highly motivated and challenged to accomplish their tasks within that span of time. These cultures are committed to regimented schedules and may view those who do not subscribe to the same perception of time as disrespectful. A polychronic time system is a system where several things can be done at once, and a more fluid approach is taken to scheduling time. Unlike Americans and most Northern and Western European cultures, Latin American, Asians and Arabic cultures use polychronic system of time. What do we mean by polychronic time system? It means ideally where a person is focusing on both, on his or her professional life as well as personal life. In a polychronic time system, the focus is not only on the schedule of work, there are a lot of maybe other aspects looked into. So several activities are done at the same time. This ideally can be an advantage as well as a disadvantage, because in this kind of a situation, when you're not focusing on one task and you're focusing on several tasks, time may be falling short. You may be ideally wanting to complete a lot of tasks in the same day. Thus, in a polychronic time system, it can lead to lack of time, it can lead to work being incomplete, and thus the focus is not 100% on either one task or maybe any of the tasks. So we need to understand how these two differ, what are the advantages and disadvantages of these two, and what can prove beneficial. But as we say, time as a concept differs from culture to culture, and thus polychronic time system is more in the Latin American, Asian and Arabic cultures. These cultures are much less focused on the preciseness of accounting for each and every moment. As we just said, probably the Arabic culture, so we're continuing from there. These cultures are steeped in tradition rather than in tasks, a clear difference from their monochronic counterparts. That means we just discussed in the previous slide that the focus is not only on the task. Instead, their culture is more focused on relationships rather than watching the clock. They have no problem being late for an event, even if they are with family or friends, because the relationship is what really matters. So a lot of focus goes beyond the activity, and when a lot of focus goes beyond an activity, it's focusing on people, maybe not on situations or tasks, then the mindset and approach is different. As a result, polychronic cultures have a much less formal perception of time. Now why is this so? I guess their way of functioning, their way of managing time, their way of probably handling a lot of activities, schedule and events in day-to-day life probably makes them behave in this manner as far as time is concerned. They're not ruled by precise calendars and schedules. Rather, cultures that use the polychronic time system often schedule multiple appointments simultaneously, so keeping on schedule is an impossibility. In the workplace, those in a leadership or management position, treat time, and by virtue of position, have the time treated differently than those who are of a lower stature position. I guess it is understood, a person at top management will probably be far more efficient in handling time and work, events and schedules as compared to someone who's a subordinate. There exist three specific examples of how chronemics and power converge in the workplace: the waiting time, talk time and work time. So use of time along with designation plays a very important role. The higher the designation, the more efficient one is expected to be with time. The higher the designation, the more capable and efficient one is in handling all the events and getting the work done. Okay, now we discuss waiting time. The act of making an individual of a lower stature wait is a sign of dominance. Now this depends whether it's intentional or unintentional. To a great extent, it depends how occupied you are and how necessary and urgent it is to meet the subordinate at that point of time. They note that the one who is in the position to cause another to wait has the power over him. To be kept waiting is to imply that one's time is less valuable than that of the one who imposes the wait. This can be considered as one aspect which probably takes place. It's not necessary that every time a subordinate is kept waiting intentionally. It also depends on what the person is occupied with in terms of the one who's called you. What designation is that person having at that juncture? And of course, a lot to do with the kind of event activity he's handling at that point of time. So we would say, of course, it is about designation, but it's also about the kind of work one is occupied with. And it also depends on what is expected at that juncture out of the subordinate. So if it's about, or if it is a discussion which is for a future event, then maybe that person might be expected to wait. Employees of equal stature will not worry about whether they're running a few minutes behind schedule to meet with one another. On the other hand, for a mid-level manager who has a meeting with the company president, a late arrival might be a non-verbal cue or a hint that you do not respect the authority of your superior. No matter what, a subordinate cannot be late. Talk time. There's a direct correlation between the power of an individual in an organization and conversation. This includes the length of the conversation, turn taking, and who initiates and ends a conversation. Extensive research indicates that those with more power in an organization will speak more often and for a greater length of time. I guess it is understood that people at top management are of course going to delegate tasks, give instructions and probably give solutions to various problems. So it is they generally who will speak more. It will be them generally who will speak more, and probably they will constantly be delegating tasks with instructions. Meetings between superiors and subordinates provide an opportunity to illustrate this concept. A superior, regardless of whether or not they are running the actual meeting, lead discussions, ask questions, and have the ability to speak for longer periods of time without interruption. So I guess it is assumed that a person at top management will definitely speak for a longer time. A person at top management will definitely ask questions to his team or to her team or group of people, and probably speak for a longer period of time so that all instructions are given carefully to the entire team. Likewise, research shows that turn-taking is influenced by power. Subordinates are expected to yield to superiors, and there's a cultural expectation that a subordinate will not interrupt a superior. So what does it mean? It means that when a subordinate and a superior are talking, the subordinate will not interrupt or speak in between. This is basic etiquette. When we talk of etiquette, it is manners. So we need to understand that no matter how important our points are or how urgent it is to put forward our points, we have to wait for the person at top management to finish talking. The length of response follows the same pattern. While the superior can speak for as long as they want, the responses of the subordinates basically have to be shorter in length. This again is about top management and subordinates. The person at top management or the superior can speak for a longer period of time. The person at top management or the superior doesn't really need to cut down on time because, say, he's having a meeting. He needs to understand, and he will definitely understand, that all the important points have to be put forward since this meeting has a purpose. But the response of the subordinate has to be precise and to the point. A deviation from this pattern can lead to negative perceptions of the subordinate by the superior. The moment a subordinate gets overbearing, the moment a subordinate doesn't show respect in terms of probably the superior or the person at top management speaking, it can lead to a problem. Beginning and ending a communication interaction in the workplace is controlled by the higher status individual in an organization. So it is understood that if we are talking of effective communication, if we are talking of delegating tasks, if we are talking of instructions, of course a lot more is in control of the person at top management. Now, it is not likely that you will ever see a president or high-level executive punching a time clock. That means they are always managing time effectively. They're not chasing time. They're living up to expectations of the work done within the time frame. Their time is perceived as more valuable and they control their own time. On the other hand, a subordinate with less power has their time controlled by a higher status individual and are in less control of the time, making them likely to report their time to a higher authority. That means a subordinate is not really in control of the time he has. His time, that means a subordinate's time, is more governed by the person who's the superior or at top management. Now, why and how does this happen? The person at top management will continue delegating tasks. He or she may delegate tasks in a manner whereby the subordinate may be able to handle the work and tasks effectively within those few hours or few days, or may not be able to handle it effectively within that specified time. So how can this be managed? It means that a subordinate is always going to have time, but the time is based on the kind of work given by the person at top management. Such practices are associated with those in non-supervisory roles or blue collar rather than white collar professions. Now, what is the difference between blue collar and white collar professions? We will discuss in the upcoming slide. Instead, as power and status in an organization increases, the flexibility of the work schedule also increases. Higher the designation, more flexibility with time, more efficiency, and more completion of work done on time. For instance, while administrative professionals might keep a 9-to-5 work schedule, their superiors may keep less structured hours. We just spoke of white-collar jobs in the previous slide. White-collar jobs are ideally people who are professionals. White-collar jobs are people who ideally work in office or cubicles. When we talk of blue-collar jobs, it means ideally someone who's a manual laborer. So there is a big difference in terms of the kind of work a person does, and then we put them as white-collar jobs or even blue-collar jobs. There is this concept known as pink-collar jobs, for example, people who are in the field of sales, entertainment, and so on. This does not mean that the superior works less. When we talk of less structured hours, it does not mean that the superior is working less. They may work longer, but the structure of their work environment is not strictly dictated by the traditional work day. That's how they're different from their subordinates. Instead, as Kohler and their associate notes, individuals who spend more time, especially spare time, to meetings, to committees, and to developing contracts are more likely to be influential decision makers. That means when you have a meeting, you have an agenda. When you have a meeting, you ideally have a goal in mind. So people who spend more time in meetings, people who spend more time networking, they have a purpose. And it is ideally these people who are also influential decision makers. Now, physical appearance, clothing. Very important when you talk of physical appearance. How does one present himself or herself? Is one having neat, tidy hair? Is one probably not wearing something very loud in terms of color? Is one wearing clothes in a manner which are suitable to his or her personality? Your physical appearance always contributes towards how people perceive you. Neatly combed hair, ironed clothes, and a lively smile will carry more weight than words. Your appearance in terms of your dress sense, your appearance in terms of you having a tidy look, your appearance in terms of not wearing wrinkled clothes, all this sets an impression for the opposite person or people. Even without saying anything, your appearance, your way of presenting yourself says much more than what your words will ever convey. While selecting clothes, appropriateness for the occasion is essential. The formality of the occasion, the time of the day, the season, the cultural background of the people who will be present, and the conventions of your own organization should provide you good guidance. Now, when we talk of clothes or appearance, first and foremost, a lot to do with the kind of climate we have. Next, we also talk of bright colors, which may not be really acceptable during the day. So colors play an important role. Most important of all, a lively smile. A smile makes the atmosphere better. A smile will definitely improve the appearance of an individual. When we talk of appearance, if in some countries a certain set of clothing is preferred, if in some countries they prefer conservative clothing, then one must go by that as far as the organization is concerned. Clothing differs from culture to culture. Dress code is enforced by some companies in order to create a brand image. Your dress code definitely creates an image for others. So, if there is a dress code, it ideally sets an environment of that of being more professional. Do not wear anything that distracts the listener from what you're trying to convey. So, one has to present himself or herself in a manner whereby people are ready to listen to the speaker and not focusing so much on the attire or the accessories. Because when you are speaking, the focus has to be more on the speaker than the other aspects. Now, we discuss one of the most important aspects of communication. Silence is also one of the important aspects of effective communication. Why? When is silence required? A lot depends on the situation, a lot depends on the reason for a person to be in silence, and why is it that at that juncture it is better to stay in silence than say anything. Silence in situations can mean any of the following. Such situations, which kind of situations are we talking of? Sympathy with someone who has suffered a loss. In that situation, it is best to stay in silence, because we are not going to be able to express, no matter what, the kind of pain the person is going through. Our words may not be as consoling as one may think. Inability to formulate feelings. At times, it gets difficult to express the feeling. It gets difficult to ideally say what is really required. So if a person is irritated, and the person may not show it, but that behavior, the irritation may show in some form of behavior. Flood of emotions that make speech impossible. So then the person is more in silence, because the emotions don't let this person speak. Uncontrollable anger that cannot or should not be expressed in words. Then the person will go in silence, which is for the better, because when anger gets uncontrollable, then it is best not to express that kind of anger, because a lot can be said which ideally may prove to be harmful or detrimental in the long run. And words which are once said cannot be taken back. So at that juncture, silence is the best. Especially when a person is angry, it is best to introspect and understand what is the reason for a person to be angry. Are you justified to have this kind of anger? Are you absolutely fine bottling up such negative feelings and this kind of anger? Or maybe at the right time you will calm down and then be able to talk and express your feelings. For listeners, silence and long pauses are difficult to handle. And as indicated earlier, they must interpret body language like eye contact, facial expressions and posture to understand its meaning and continue dialogue. Say I am discussing business communication, and if I pause for a very long time, so I say, all right class, let's discuss the advantages of social media versus traditional media. The continuous pause or silence, as just shown, will not be effective. For a few seconds, it is absolutely fine. If a question is asked, it is absolutely fine. But when there is a talk, a speech, a dialogue, interaction, the pauses and silence for a longer time may not be appreciated. If such pause or silence occurs during a telephone conversation, absence of physical clues obstructs flow of communication. When I say absence of physical clues, since the person is not face to face, there is no eye contact, there is no facial expression visible. So it gets difficult to actually figure out anything. Pauses in the form of short silences, however, are very effective in providing emphasis to what is being conveyed. A pause before or after a word results in that word to stand out from the rest. A skillfully placed pause succeeds in making a listener more alert. On many occasions, a pause at correct juncture is more effective than wild gestures. So, for example, I suggest we submit the project by the 20th. Now, a pause for a few seconds there will ideally mean that the speaker is letting the audience realize and know that 20th of this month, which is barely, say, 3 days away, for example. So, will the others agree, disagree, find it difficult to submit within the deadline? Those aspects need to be thought over. So, pause at the right time is most required for communication to be effective, and it says much more than words.